following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, boy. Best laid plans and all that. I don't know if we're on. Is this thing on? I have no idea. Here's the problem. Literally, 7 minutes ago, I used two computers for the main show. Two computers. And, about 7 minutes ago, both of them, the Ethernet cut out. One of them, the main computer, thankfully the Wi-Fi is working. My secondary computer doesn't even show Wi-Fi. Like something is screwed up in there. My attempts to get AT&T on the line were fruitless. So here we are. I don't know if we're on. I can't bring up anything on this computer. It's worthless, though I can bring up audio, apparently. It is what it is. I do not think. I don't know if we're on or not. I'm going to attempt, actually, to record this. Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to say show and do this, record, in the event that I can record video and I can upload something later. I'll try. I don't know if it will work or not. Anyway, hey, welcome to the show. Let me open up. Damn it, I don't even have Skype on this computer either. But I'm going to bring it up in a way that will get the phones working. I think I can do it online. Somebody let me know, maybe via Twitter, if I'm even on. Is this thing on? I don't know. It's been a while since I've had a complete technical screw up. So, hey, here we are. So I guess we start with, while I try to figure this out, did you hear or watch the not State of the Union address last night? Yeah. So, hold on. Let me sign in here. My account, use Skype online. And this way I'll have a phone that I can use. Oh, great. I got to use a different browser. Okay. Nothing like, you know, everything falling apart the moment before you go on the air. I just love this shit. Hold on 1 second. I'm working on getting a phone going. So anyway, Joe Biden delivered his first address to a joint session of Congress last night, to a fraction of a joint session of Congress last night, because only 200 people were allowed in the room. Because, you know, COVID. Now, there was a bit of a disconnect there because, let's see, somebody's messaging me on Facebook. Let's see what they're saying. Hopefully somebody's telling me what's up. I got you on TuneIn Radio. Thank you, Charlene. I appreciate it. So the audio stream is working. We got that much going on. So thank you for that. So you can hear us on TuneIn on either the Progressive Voices channel or the Nicole Sandler channel. Or again, you can always get the stream directly at NicoleSandlerStream.com. Let's see. So anyway, no, I see Stephanie Kelton. I think we're supposed to talk next week. Oh, everything's happening all at once. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, let's... people are messaging me. Hold on. I thought we were doing it next week. Wait a second. I everything is all foobar. And I'm going to have to reply to Stephanie Kelton in a little while. Okay. So I seem to have a phone. So if somebody would like to call in to test the phone, I think I'm on the wrong one. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. I got to sign out of here. Sorry, bear with. Okay, so I'll tell you what. Let me play a little bit of last night while I try to figure out what the hell is happening here. Yes, sign out. So here's Joe Biden, how he started his speech last night, if this works.
I stand here tonight, one day shy of the 100th day of my administration. 100 days since I took the oath of office and lifted my hand off our family Bible and inherited a nation, we all did, that was in crisis. The worst pandemic in a century. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. The worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. Now, after just 100 days, I can report to the nation, America is on the move again.
Well, that's what he said. America is on the move again. And okay, that worked for me. I'm going to jump now to the very end. I'm trying to chew gum and talk at the same time. So bear with me, please. I thought it was a great speech. And I am, of course, one person who was very critical of Joe Biden, did not want him to be the nominee, did not think he could win. And if he won, I was worried about how he would govern. Well, I believe that he is trying to move the country forward. I really think he has the best interests of the nation at heart. I think he's trying to do what's best. And if in this case, it means spending a lot of money. Now, today's Thursday and Howie Klein will be here. And at downwithtyranny.com, Howie has a post up about, I think he said, I think he titled it, Biden's speech was okay. Okay. I think it was better than okay. So if we're still around, if we're still on the air, when it's time for Howie, I will definitely ask him about it. But we're not going to dwell on the speech because, frankly, between you and I, Howie is predisposed to not appreciate anything that Joe Biden does. I'm, you know, holding myself out here to say I had a change of heart. I had a change of heart because I'm sorry, I'm trying to read that to try to find the right password here to log in and do two things at once, which really is not easy. Man, I really just really, really hate this. I'm sorry. Anyway, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think he's under the worst of circumstances, trying to do what he needs to do to move the country forward. I do think he's taking a lot of advice, a lot of counsel. He's taking counsel from Bernie Sanders. And I'm grateful for that because we need Bernie. All right. I do have the phone up on this computer. If someone wants to call in and let me know that we're on, although Charlene did send me a message via Facebook, so I know she's hearing me. Hold on. I thought next week. Anyway. All right. So anyway. Oh, and I, of course, I got a call. Okay. Here's it's Pam calling from San Bernardino. Hey, Pam, can you hear me? Okay.
So anyway. Oh, and I,
Pam, okay. Hello. Hello,
Nicole. It's Pam from San Bernardino.
I see. Hi. Can you hear me? All right.
Yes.
All right. This is so frustrating.
And you're on Twitch.
I'm on Twitch. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but good. So I have video going? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's wild. Thank you for letting me know.
Okay.
So, all right, I appreciate it. All right, thank you. Hi, from the 270 area code. Okay, they hung up. All right, so we are live on Twitch. Thank you for that. It's funny because here's somebody else calling in from the 515 area code. Hi, who's this?
All right, I appreciate it. All right, thank you.
Hello? You got to turn down the radio because we have a delay. Hello?
That's all right.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Edlin, listening to you on Facebook Live.
Oh, cool. Wow. So the setup, I set everything up on the other computer before it crapped out. But I guess the settings are still in place, so it's working. All right. So I'm just going to go as if I have audio and video. Thank you for letting
me. You do.
Cool. All right. Well, that's good to know. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. You too. All right. Let's go back. 270 is on the line. Who's this? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, that's you. Thank you for calling. So you're letting me know that we're on, that you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're on both Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, good. So we are on Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. So all of the setup work I did is working, even though I can't get to those sites. Okay. Well, good. Good to know that that worked, even though I can't play with the settings now. Thank you for letting me know. So we're just going to go ahead and do a show as usual and hope everything works.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys checking in. This is the hard part about working alone, because I depend on you guys basically to be my producer, because I'm flying blind here. So we are on, thanks to Wi-Fi, on one computer, but my Ethernet went out. It's so weird because obviously I have an internet connection, right? Love the internet. Can't live with it. Can't live without it. So we have an internet connection. However, my both computers show that I do not have Ethernet. I can't connect to the Ethernet, which is so weird. But I'm not going to worry about it because we're here. So let me, let's see, did this, and Jackson's out there, and Jackson's barking. Thanks, Jack. Hey, David, can you close my door? Anyway, you hear Jackson, he's getting in on the act because he wants to say hello too. Let me share with you an op-ed, an editorial from Washington Post columnist Alexandra Petri, because I think she hit on the mood surrounding the speech last night. The headline reads, "Opinion: What a polarizing, divisive speech from President Biden." And she wrote, wow, I couldn't have been more let down by President Biden's speech. Yes, I am arguing in good faith. My nose always looks like this. I like it this way so that birds can perch on it, and it's harder for me to go through doors without a lot of thought and effort. Of course I remember the past 4 years. That is why I was so sad about Biden's address to the joint session of Congress. I could barely keep Senator Ted Cruz awake, and Ted Cruz stays awake during speeches by Ted Cruz. It was so bad that Representative Lauren Boebert Colorado needed a foil space blanket for some reason. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell barely clapped. Biden barraged America's ears by saying so many polarizing, depressing things, like that vaccines were now broadly available, or that he wanted prescription drug prices to be lower. Lower! Disgusting. Where were the olive branches we were promised? Where was the healing? I heard Biden's promise that he would bring America together, yet he did not a single time pause to give legitimacy to the suggestion that he had stolen the election. He barely urged his supporters to storm any buildings at all, not even their state houses. Or if he did, I missed it because his tone was so soft and earnest. He said something about, quote, dreamers. That was positive. And he told transgender Americans that he had their back. Seems needlessly polarizing. Where is his outreach to those who want to punish and dehumanize them? I just miss the days of Donald Trump, when we had a president who helped the nation heal by shouting about carnage. That was a golden age of bipartisanship. If bipartisanship means what I think it means, which is only when my preferences are honored, but other people are there as well. Of course, Biden has every right to an agenda of his own, so long as it doesn't in any way conflict with my policy preferences or desires and does not involve any ideas I disagree with. I am ready and willing to cooperate and reach across the aisle to embrace such common sense ideas as, quote, Joe Biden was not legitimately elected and maybe there is too much voting. It's not as though he has nothing to offer us. He's still keeping the refugee cap in place despite outcry and a promise to fix it. But he certainly didn't center that in the speech. What a disappointment for me and all the Americans who tuned in hoping for some healing. Wow. Just wow. That, my friends, is in the Washington Post today. It is satire from Alexandra Petri, who does a really good job of that. All of the moaning and groaning and, oh my God, over the speech. Give it a rest, people. Just give it a rest. All right, back to the phones. I see someone calling, it looks like, from South Florida. Who's this?
David in North Miami Beach.
Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Isn't a teacher, but not at the Centner Academy, where you're not allowed to work if you've been vaccinated.
Yeah, Centner Academy. Yeah. I know. I tried calling them yesterday, but they wouldn't talk to me, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I appreciate Biden's attempt to reverse the last 4 years. There were two phrases I would have loved to hear from him or the senator: trade school or basic income. Even was it Ted Cruz who mockingly suggested a big basic income?
Did he? Why do you listen to anything Ted Cruz says?
Well, in this case, comedy, or in the category of a thought proxy, right twice a day.
Or what? Say again. You're breaking up on me.
A stopped clock is right.
Oh,
twice
a stopped
a day.
Clock is right twice a day. Yes, that is true. But yeah, Ted Cruz. You know what? I don't care what he has to say. Now, talk of a basic income. Well, that's not even in Joe Biden's wheelhouse, so I didn't expect that. Trade school. You know, he talked about this new American family plan includes 4 more years of school, of education for all Americans, meaning two more years of early preschool, mm-hmm. and 2 years of community college. I would think that the 2 years of community college could be traded in for a trade school. I can't imagine why that wouldn't be, but that's kind of down in the details, in the fine print.
It's just one of those things that could almost hear Rick Smith yelling. Uh-huh. Otherwise, talking about community college, that's the 2004 debate all over again.
Well, no, I mean, it's the same. No, we haven't. I'm sorry, David. No, we haven't. 2 years of community college is a big deal. If it's paid for, look, my kid would have gone to college. As it was, she didn't. And I'm not just making it about us. It is not. It's not an old argument. It hasn't been settled yet. So he wants to get that done and then make more Pell Grants available for people to go on to 4-year degrees. That's a good thing.
It is a good thing, absolutely. But it's something that some Republicans or even conservative Democrats are going to pick up on and use against them. So I hope he builds, but mazel tov otherwise.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, David. Good to hear from you. Let's move up to... Oh, I take my heart in my hands when I go to a call from New Mexico. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Mike in Santa Fe.
Hey, Mike in Santa Fe. What's on your mind today? Did you watch the speech last night?
I did, but my question was, I had heard you like a day, maybe 2 days ago, where you were critical of the attorney Benjamin Crump, and I wondered if you could expound on that.
Oh, I just, you know what? I wonder, is he the only attorney representing these families? There's something that rubs me the wrong way when every time there's a tragedy involving a young, usually unarmed black man being killed by the police, Benjamin Crump is the guy they go to. I just think there's a world of talented attorneys out there. Benjamin Crump, it kind of bugs me.
Yeah, of course you do, right? You think Rudy should represent them,
okay,
right?
I knew it was you. I knew it was you. You know, you started out okay,
yeah,
and you still,
you, know,
you can't
you know.
Help but listen. Yeah. You just have to listen. This is a guy, he's a troll. He not only trolls me, he sends emails to me, Randy Rhodes, Tom Hartman, you know, the whole gang. He listens nonstop. He listens obviously to every word we say, but then he trolls us. All right. So, yeah, I did say something about Benjamin Crump. It seems like he injects himself into every situation. And maybe the families call him, and maybe they do because they know him, because he is at every horrible event like this. It bothers me that he seems to be getting very wealthy off of a lot of people being killed by police. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about today. Okay, that was weird. It is a weird day. So if you're just joining us, I'm having computer problems, but we seem to be on and firing on all cylinders. I'm probably not going to play much video today because I'm all discombobulated. Anyway, so let me share a few more clips from... The speech last night that I thought were particularly good. Oh, and what I started telling you before is today, I'll talk about it with Howie for a little bit, but we are going to move on to other topics. Tomorrow, I'm going to be joined by Harvey J.K., who's a historian, a professor, and we will talk about the speech that happened last night. Okay. So that's where we are. Anyway, one part, there's a lot of stuff. For instance, one of the things that I hear or that I read on Facebook of all the scaremongering Republicans, Joe Biden, you know, he's going to raise your taxes. Well, here's what he said about raising your taxes.
I will not impose any tax increase on people making less than $400,000. But it's time for corporate America and the wealthiest 1% of Americans to just begin to pay their fair share. Trickle-down economics has never worked. And it's time to grow the economy from the bottom and the middle out.
Yes, those are the things we've been waiting years to hear a president say, right? And speaking of Benjamin Crump and this horrible trend that we seem to be suffering under of police brutality. Here's what Joe Biden had to say on that issue.
We've all seen the knee of injustice on the neck of Black Americans.
We have.
Now's our opportunity to make some real progress. We have to come together to rebuild trust between law enforcement and the people they serve, to root out systemic racism in our criminal justice system. I know Republicans have their own ideas and are engaged in a very productive discussions with Democrats in the Senate. Mm-hmm. We need to work together to find a consensus. But let's get it done next month by the first anniversary of George Floyd's death.
That would be nice.
The country supports this reform and Congress should act.
Yes, Congress should act. But here's the problem. You know, some of my more liberal friends, and I would always be in this group. I'm telling you, there has been a sea change in me. And, if I saw the same, and I'm going to piss people off here, and I'm sorry. It's just me being me. I'm being honest with you. The phone line's open. If you disagree, you're welcome to call in 954-889-6410. But Barack Obama was, what's the right word, wishy-washy. He said one thing when he was running. Look, he wasn't my first choice. I was actually in the primary, voted for John Edwards. But when it came time, I voted for Obama. Before the debates, going way back to 2008, I was an Obama fan. I went to see him speak here in Miami. He was brilliant. I'm like, oh, God, this guy should run for president. Once I saw him in the debates, I thought, he's not ready. Really, he had only been in the Senate 2 years. He was not ready. My view, my opinion, I'm entitled to it. You're entitled to yours. He was the guy who wanted everybody to love him. He thought he was operating in a postpartisan, post-racial war world, and we know that's not true. And he bent over backwards to try to get the Republicans on board. And I was afraid we were in for the same bet, more of the same with Joe Biden, who appears to be making the motions because he has to. And then when the Republicans don't play ball, he's willing to work, go forward without them because he knows how much is on at stake. And I think it's, I'm impressed with this Joe Biden. Never thought I would say that. And I've half jokingly said a few times in the last couple of weeks, I've never been so glad to be so wrong. But can you imagine, this is a long clip. Shit, I don't want to play the whole thing. You know what? Let me cue into it a little bit because this is where he talks about the Violence Against Women's Act. He wants that renewed. And he goes on to talk about a few other areas where he wants to lend his support. I think this comes in around this part. Let's see.
And don't tell me it can't be done. We did it before and it worked.
Talking about the assault weapons ban there,
I think. Most responsible gun owners and hunters.
Yep.
They'll tell you there's no possible justification for having 100 rounds in a weapon. What do you think, deer are wearing Kevlar vests? They'll tell you that there are too many people today who are able to buy a gun but shouldn't be able to buy a gun.
That is true.
These kinds of reasonable reforms have overwhelming support from the American people, including many gun owners.
The country supports reform this, and Congress should act.
Yep.
This shouldn't be a red or blue issue.
Nope.
And no amendment to the Constitution is absolute. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
That is true.
From the very beginning, there were certain guns, weapons, that could not be owned by Americans. Certain people could not own those weapons ever. We're not changing the Constitution. We're being reasonable.
Okay, that wasn't the clip I wanted. I thought I was looking for the clip where he talked about transgender kids and saying, I've got your back. We've never heard anything like that before, and that was remarkable. Back to the phones. Hello, David. What's up?
Hello, darling. I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with you. You're completely wrong about Barack Obama. He was not wishy-washy.
No.
Barack Obama was, without a doubt, the best moderate Republican president of my lifetime.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That all?
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, David. I don't want to get into a whole debate over Obama. I am very critical of him. We were promised hope and change, and we got, I'm sorry, wishy-washy. That's the only way I can describe it. He didn't do what we needed him to do. All right. Phones are busy today. Hi, who's this? Hello, 612 area code.
Hello.
Hello, that's you. And he hung up. Okay. It's live radio. And I guess something maybe sounds different. Oh, he's calling back again. Hi, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Nicole. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Yeah. What's up?
Okay, good. This is your loyal listener, Roger.
I thought it was you because I saw the 612. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what's going on?
Real quick. I remember the first time I saw or heard of Barack Obama was in 2004 when he gave a keynote address at the Democratic Convention.
Of course, that's when most of us first heard of him, and he was great. He's a great speaker. He's a wonderful orator.
I remember turning to my wife and saying, literally within minutes of ever hearing this guy, that man will be the first black man to become president of the United States. I said that to her point.
Absolutely. And I was all in. But sometimes being able to deliver a great speech and being personable and having charisma is not what you need to be president. Let me tell you, Joe Biden doesn't give a great speech and does not have charisma. And it scares me every time he opens his mouth that he's going to offer some kind of gaffe, which is what he's been known for years. But so far... I'm more impressed with what he's done or what he's trying to do in his first 100 days than I was with Obama pretty much in 8 years.
Well, I always found Obama's lacing in of religious themes to his speeches to be unacceptable and annoying.
Yeah, they all do that.
And it didn't take me long to formulate what I wound up deciding was a good nickname for Obama, and that was the expression, I called him Mushmouth. So I'm about as generous to him as you are. And here's one thing that I do know. He wanted to avoid the appearance. He wanted to avoid being labeled as an angry
black man.
That would have been the kiss of death for his campaign.
Right.
And I have witnessed in negotiating situations with in business with black people that they're often unwilling to drive as hard of a bargain as they should because they don't want to be perceived as being difficult to deal
with. You know what, and Roger, I so appreciate your calls, but I'm not comfortable with two white people talking about, you know, what black people do and how they present. It's not us. That's not our place.
All right. Well, okay. Let me just throw this out then. I'm delighted to be able to string the word president with a name again.
You and me both.
I uttered those two words contiguously with the previous.
Nor did I. With the prior guy. Yeah, nor did I. Unless I was reading something and had to and sort of threw up in my mouth a little bit between the two words. I hear you, Roger. And I appreciate the call. Thank you. Thank you. I hope things are okay in Minneapolis these days. All right. I'm going to run because we made it through the first half hour. You know what that means. It is time to mix up those dirty Debbies. Who's got them today? Let's find out and get Howie on the line.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hi, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole.
So if I sound a little weird today, it's I'm having computer issues. My internet, like the Ethernet connection to both of my studio computers, went out 7 minutes before showtime. And I'm on one computer via Wi-Fi. The other one I can't even get going. So things are kind of a little off kilter today. So if I sound weird, that's why. Howie Klein. What's that?
I said sorry about that.
Yeah, you and me both. It's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. Anyway, I know we're not going to go into great depth on this. I read it down with tyranny.com, your article about the speech last night. And I think the headline read something like, it was okay. It was okay?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, you know, that was like a sort of dashed together piece. I have a very long and in-depth piece on it running soon.
Oh, really?
The next post up the next post up, you know, I talked to some of the Blue America candidates and got their perspectives on it. And I was surprised that some of them were, you know, kind of not real positive about it. I had written a piece already about how, you know, I mean, it's okay. I mean, the one thing that we don't want to do with Biden all the time, and we always and we naturally do it, is compare him to Trump, because compared to Trump, he's incredibly fantastic.
Right.
But compared to what is needed and what could be, you know, he's less fantastic.
Okay. What about compared to Obama?
Yeah, Obama was better than Trump. He's sort of like Obama, you know, maybe a little better than that at this point. But you know, the thing is I'd rather just compare him to what is actually needed than to, make up some other thing. And, you know, this country needs help, and he's on his way. He's definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Absolutely, without question.
Okay.
But, you know, in terms of structural change and of real, you know, the real kind of change that's actually needed, he never said he was going to do that. And anyone who ever thought he was had to be delusional, but he's certainly not going there.
In what respect? I mean, because I heard a lot of good ideas, a lot of programs he wants to, you know, there are a lot, he threw a lot of stuff out there last night.
There is good stuff. But you didn't hear Medicare for All.
No, didn't hear Medicare for All.
You didn't hear a program that is going to do what is actually needed for the Green New Deal. Like, in other words, it's being treated as something that's important, not something that's existential.
See, and I disagree with that. I he's not calling it the Green New Deal, but I think he's working through a lot of the elements. And in this climate...
Absolutely. I said he's doing some stuff on it. I'm not saying he's not. But you know, I'm not getting a, you know, the sound of a fire engine going off and saying we're either going to do this or we're going to die.
I'm thinking we're going to get there because he's going to have to lay that out to the Joe Manchins and Kyrsten Sinemas and others who we don't know of yet, who are, you know, putting up a roadblock on some of the progress that they want to make. But I think he's looking at it in a realistic sense and trying to figure out what he can get through this Congress, where we have no leeway in either chamber.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's, I'm not trying to say anything negative about him.
All right. I'm surprised. So you watched it last night. I didn't even think you would have watched it.
I didn't watch it. Oh. I listened to it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
It was on in the background.
I gotcha. Well, that's okay. Because, you know, watching Joe Biden deliver a speech is not that exciting. Listening is not that exciting. I was just happy that I heard somebody talking about moving us forward. Again, I know it's a big contrast between now and what we had for the last 4 years, but it's also a big contrast for the years before that. I won't go as far as to say what I heard Tom Hartman say, this was the best speech I heard since JFK. I'm not going to go there, but I will say it was refreshing, and it was something that I'm, you know, a few times throughout the speech, I went, hell yeah. You know, we haven't heard that in a while. So I'm trying to not be the looking at the glass as half empty, but as half full. I'm trying to be the optimist that I don't always embrace.
All right. Well, you know, I don't want to
impress
you, but
no worries.
So don't read my. Read my post.
Well, of course I'm going to read your post, Howie Klein. But anyway, that's why today I wanted to talk about another post you have up at downwithtyranny.com. And
talk about depressing.
Yes. And I facetiously said it'll be less depressing. Wasn't serious about that. But what's going on in India right now is not only depressing, it's frightening. It's horrific. I mean, I saw a TV report last night. I don't remember on what channel, but just seeing people there surrounded by death and agony and, oh my God. Now, you spent a lot of time in India, so you're familiar with the layout of the country. Do they have a way out of this?
Well, not only have I spent a lot of time in India, right at this moment, I'm doing business in India. So I'm literally on the phone with Indian, well, I have been until last week, every day, talking to a team of people that are helping me in Delhi. And, you know, one of the guys who I talk to frequently died. Another one is on oxygen, and one of his colleagues told me that she's afraid he is going to.
Oh, my God.
One of those people is 26, and the other one is 27.
Oh, my goodness.
As well. So it's a very, very, very bad situation. These are all, you know, the best and the brightest over there. These are college kids who are, you know, very sincere and goal-driven and, you know, really good and conscious people. And they're, you know, it's a very, very terrible scene in India. One of the things that I wrote about was that when I first got to India, it was 1970. And, the air, you could literally see the air. I mean, the air, it was so filthy. It was beyond anything I had ever experienced in my life. And then the next time I was in India, a few years later, they had made some progress. They had cleaned it up. And then I've been to India five or six times since then, and all the progress is long gone. Oh. And as bad as it was when I first went.
You know, I've heard, I've never been to India, but I've heard so many wonderful things about India that people, Bob Ney, for instance, who I got to know after his whole Jack Abramoff stuff, he spends half the year in India every year. This is his spiritual place, his place. And then you see, you know, I watch Slumdog Millionaire. I know it's not the best way to get an impression of a country, but that's what I have to go on. And it seems like it's, you know, even more split there than it is here. You're either very, very poor or very rich. There's no in between.
There is a growing middle class, although from what I've heard, in the last year, the middle class has very, very seriously eroded because of the economic fallout. You know, I want to just point out something. People aren't aware of Indian politics, and India has a fascist leader.
Modi.
This guy, Narendra Modi.
Right? Yep.
A lot of wealthy Indians who live in the United States, or even middle-class Indians who live in the United States, really like him. So you wind up sometimes getting quite a bit of positive stuff about him. But he's a really terrible fascist who was responsible for deaths of hundreds of Muslims before he was prime minister.
Right.
He's every bit as bad as Trump. He's a Trumpist type. You know, he and Bolsonaro and Trump are three of the people that handled the pandemic worse.
Right.
So if there's any silver lining over this whole thing, is that it looks like his political career is going to be done now. I mean, I don't know if that's really true, but that's what I'm hearing from my friends in India, who are saying, you know, even people who were sort of casually supporting him have now come to blame him for the problem. And he deserves the blame. I mean, it's not like he doesn't. I mean, just the same way that someone like Ron DeSantis and Trump deserve the blame, Modi deserves the blame as well.
Right.
The situation in India, to go to your question, is absolutely horrendous. I mean, now they're averaging around 350,000 new cases a day. India is probably going to wind up having more cases than the U.S. And I mean, one estimate that I read, I don't know how accurate it is, it looked like it was a for real thing, it said they're expecting India will soon be having 1 million cases a day, 1 million new cases a day.
Oh my God.
The other thing about India is that the statistics are so untrustworthy that there's every chance in the world that it's twice as bad as they're painting it to be.
Twice as
bad.
Wow. Wow. And
Florida, where they're just sort of hedging around, you know, fudging around the edges. This is, you know, whole provinces are being, you know, purposely miscounted. Other ones can't be counted. Real bad scene going on there, and horrible, just horrible. I mean, these, you know, a lot of people don't have a real good idea about India and what kind of a country it is. But you know, your friend Bob Ney, you know, he loves India. Roland and I love India as well. You know, like I said, I've been there many, many times. I don't go there because I don't like it. I go there because I love it.
Right.
So it's very painful to see this, you know, and they have a rich, vibrant culture and, you know, fantastic people. And to see the horror that they're going through now is just absolutely hideous.
Right.
And, I had the idea that the U.S. and other developed countries had no interest in helping them. I know that now that's changed. And, you know, today I believe the first shipment of help came from America. But
good.
But I'm getting the idea that it's very grudging you know, they just wanted to get away without doing much for them. And then the outrage from that swelled up, you know, made them change that.
Right. But when you say them, who are you referring to? Do you think this is coming from the top?
The decision makers in various countries.
Okay.
I mean, who's the them when it comes to, for example, making the decision that patents are going to be enforced
for the vaccines.
Who makes that
I don't know.
I mean,
the patent holders?
Know who makes
it. I, right. I don't know, but this is a big question because there's a big debate now. Obviously, parts of the world like India and like the poor African nations and other parts of the world where they're getting zero vaccine so far because they don't have the money or the clout on the global stage, where people are saying, let's not worry about the patents. Let's get everybody the vaccine and we'll worry about that down the line. But I guess it's the pharmaceutical companies who've developed these drugs. In many cases, with public dollars, we subsidized it, that they're the ones who are fighting it. I mean, you know, part of my...
But they're fighting it, but in what, you know, they're fighting it and they're winning it. And, you know, who's the referee?
Yeah,
and
I don't know.
Who's the one who could say to them,
too bad.
No,
right. I don't know. I don't.
This is the way it's going to be.
The patent office? I don't know. But this is obviously something that we need to figure out because this needs to change.
Yeah. Well, right? I agree. I agree.
You know, something.
Some people are blaming it on Bill Gates.
Oh, God. Well,
I don't know why, but I suppose there's something to it. I've seen it a few times.
Well, you know, I've seen
maybe
a few
not.
Times, too, that Donald Trump actually won the election. It was stolen from him. So,
yeah,
you know, there's that. So, Howie Klein, you also in this article, though, you write about that the COVID infection that's taken over India, that's just so horrific, is on top of another really bad situation, which is air pollution. That the air pollution there is so bad. You say in New Delhi, it's like just breathing the air is like smoking packs of cigarettes a day.
Yeah. So, yes. So the air in India, it makes people sick to begin with, but it's now a comorbidity, or at least that's what some doctors are saying, is that it's a comorbidity for people who get COVID. So in other words, you have less of a chance to survive it because of how, you know, your lungs being weakened by breathing in the air there.
Oh boy.
And,
You
know, India, Indian cities tend to be pretty bad when it comes to it, but for a variety of reasons, and there are a few of them, Delhi is the worst of all. You know, I mean, and some of the reasons are just like hideous. I mean, you know, some make some kind of sense that you could say, well, you know, the farmers are burning the crops and the pollution from that doesn't have, since Delhi is an inland place, it doesn't have anywhere to go and it winds up hovering over the city and that's what the problem is or part of the problem. And that's true. But, you know, then there's the annual, I think it's the Diwali festival, where the amount of firecrackers, even though the government has supposedly tried to cut back on it, supposedly, the amount of firecrackers is accounting for incredible numbers of deaths of people from pollution.
Oh, my goodness.
Or lung disease. And they die from the lung disease.
And now it's the smell of bodies burning because the crematoriums are full. And so they have like makeshift outdoor crematoriums surrounding the crematoriums and they're burning bodies because they can't bury them fast enough.
Anybody who thinks that we're safe while this is going on in India is insane. I mean, this is, we're all in this together, and I know that a lot of Americans can't conceive of that, but it's the case. And you know, we've got to help these people, and we've got to, and the fact that pharmaceutical companies want to make a bigger profit should not be a factor. That should be the last factor that anybody thinks about.
Well, you know, duh is the first thing that comes to mind. You know, we're in this. This is a global issue. And as long as a country like India is ravaged with this virus, none of us are safe. And to hear people, you know, you listen to the right wingers, and I don't very often. But I knew that one of the talking points today about last night was going to be, why are they all wearing masks if they've all been vaccinated? They don't need to wear wear masks. Well, they're following the protocol for when you're in a big room with a lot of people, you wear a mask. It's to keep everybody safe. It's common sense. And yet the right, and some people that I thought I knew and liked, I saw a friend of mine who during the pandemic started doing an internet, you know, a Facebook Live show. And I thought I knew. And last night I happened to be flipping through Facebook and he was on. He's got captions and I'm reading what he's saying. And he's talking about, I'm so over this. We're done. We don't need masks anymore. We're beyond it. It's like, no, we're not. And that's what's going to bring back another surge and make a variant that is resistant to the vaccines.
Yeah, well, India already has a double variant.
Yep.
They're calling it a double mutation, which is more deadly, and they're not sure if it's resistant or how resistant. And then, India, they had a first wave just the way we did,
yeah,
and they handled it fairly well. And then people were saying, "Oh, we're sick of this thing. We're all better. Everything's fine." And then now it's hell on earth. It's literally hell on earth. People are just sitting around waiting to die.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's what I worry about. And so when I go out, of course, I still wear a mask, and I still don't go out very much. I mean, this is what, this is our new reality, at least for the time being.
Anymore. I don't hear you.
You don't hear me anymore? Oh, shoot.
I hear nothing.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Wait, I don't even hear any noise.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm still here, but all right. I'm going to hang up on Howie, and I'll try to call him back. And if we don't get him back, then we'll talk to him next week. Let's try one more time. This is because my internet is not working properly. Yeah. So
please leave a message.
Nope. All right. We got voicemail that time. All right, so we'll talk to Howie next week. Find Howie Klein at downwithtyranny.com and all that stuff. I thought this was going to be about Facebook. I just saw something from the New York Times about Twitter permanently banning Donald Trump, and all of a sudden their revenue jumped 28% in the first post-Trump quarter. I know it makes Twitter a lot more pleasant for me without Trump online. All right, so it's back to just you and me. You know what? I want to share an email that I got last night. I was going to share it with Howie, but we don't have Howie on the line anymore. And this is from Michael. I don't know where Michael lives, but Michael, somewhere in the United States, who wrote, "I'm listening to your show from last Thursday." And again, he sent this late last night, 1:56 a.m. it came in. "I'm listening to your show from last Thursday, and I really have to disagree with Howie Klein, as much as I love him. I'm as progressive and left as can be, and one could argue that my first choice of Warren wasn't that. But I honestly think that Biden was the placeholder for this moment in time. And trust me on this, he was my last choice. I just don't think any of the other contenders in the race could have achieved what he has with our unfortunate current structure. And I'm listening after the address this evening and sort of rambling. What I want to say is that I appreciate you so much. Your show keeps me grounded, and I appreciate that we and your guests can agree to disagree sometimes." We can. "Much love and admiration from one of the gays. Best, Michael." Well, Michael, love and admiration to you, too. And thank you for realizing that. I don't always agree with Howie, but Howie is a really important voice in the progressive world. He, with the Blue America PAC, does so much in terms of identifying candidates, progressive congressional candidates, and helping them get their campaigns up and running and raising funds for them. The Blue America PAC doesn't take any money, as just about every other one does. They raise money and they immediately use it to support the candidates. Howie, it's Howie Klein, Digby, and John Amato from Crooks and Liars. And they don't take a management fee they don't take any money off. They don't take anything from it. They're doing this for the greater good because we need more progressives in Congress if we want to push this, and I'll say it, Biden agenda through. The Biden agenda that I do think in big part comes from Bernie Sanders. But, it's just me. Anyway, Michael, thank you for the email. I agree 100%. And let's see, what else? I still have another couple of clips that I want to play for you. My biggest complaint about Joe Biden's speech was at the end. You know, he was trying to sound this great, a positive note. And I'm going to play you a clip here. It's very short. But you'll notice it's like a quadruple negative. You know, it's not, well, let me play it for you and you'll see what I'm talking about. This is basically how he ended the speech.
It's never, ever, ever been a good bet to bet against America, and it still isn't.
What?
We're the United States.
Okay, wait. It's never, negative, been a good bet to bet against America, and it still isn't. That was three. Wait. do you see what I'm saying?
It's never, ever, ever been a good bet to bet against America. And it still isn't. We're the United States of America.
Damn it. Okay. So, you know, why wouldn't you say you gotta bet for us? You gotta, you know, it's the triple negative kind of bugged me. But I so appreciate what he said. I mean, he said a lot of the right things, like...
Our Constitution opens with the words, as trite as it sounds, we the people. Well, it's time to remember that we the people are the government.
Yeah.
You and I. Not some force in a distant capital.
Yeah.
We've stared into the abyss of insurrection and autocracy, pandemic and pain. And we the people did not flinch.
Okay. And there was another moment that stood out to me. Do you remember when Barack Obama tried to, you know, he did the "you didn't build this" when the whole the back and forth was going on. And again, Obama just wanted everyone to love him. And by wanting everyone to love him, he wound up having nobody really happy with him. But Obama went on this whole thing about, you didn't build this, we built this. And it was clumsy, so much for him being the great orator. Actually, Joe Biden said it better last night.
The middle class built the country, and unions built the middle class.
Oh. Yeah, and then he went on to say,
pass Protect the Right to Organize Act, the PRO Act, and
pass
send it
the
to
PRO
my desk
Act.
So we can support the right to unionize.
Please. Listen to the other things he wants sent to his desk.
And by the way, while you're thinking about sending things to my desk, let's raise the minimum wage to $15.
Okay.
No one working 40 hours a week. No one working 40 hours a week should live below the poverty line.
No shit.
We need to ensure greater equity and opportunity for women. And while we're doing this, let's get the Paycheck Fairness Act to my desk as well.
Hell
it's
yeah.
Okay. It's
Hell
been
yeah.
much too long.
It has been.
If you wonder whether it's too long, look behind me.
Yeah, well, and behind him was, of course, the moment. It was Kamala Harris, the first woman vice president, sitting with the first female Speaker of the House. The first time there were two women back there. That was a moment in history. And I, you know, there's one other clip that I wanted to play for you, but I thought it was in this one, and maybe it's earlier in this clip. I'll find it for you for tomorrow. But it was the one where Joe Biden called out and spoke specifically to the transgender children. I live in the state of Florida, where the legislative session officially ends tomorrow. And oh boy, this state earned its name yet again. And one of the bills that was passed that has either already been signed into law or soon will be, was this, you know, ban on transgender athletes participating in sports. This is just a vindictive, hateful bullshit limitation on kids. There's no reason for it. And I was thrilled that Joe Biden said, talk directly to the transgender children and said, your president has your back. He skyrocketed in my esteem with that comment. Do I love Joe Biden? No. But more and more, I'm coming to the realization, my conclusion, that I think he was the right guy for this time. And I think the way of the world has really affected him. And I think hearing from us, by us, I mean the progressives, has made a huge difference. And I do think his goals are in the right place. I think they're aligned with ours for the most part. Would I love to see Medicare for all? Yes. Would I have loved to have heard him last night say we want to lower the Medicare eligibility age to 55? Without a doubt. But again, I'm never going to feel 100% in lockstep with any elected official. And I'll say even more, if I was an elected official, I probably wouldn't agree 100% with myself either, because I understand occasionally you need to compromise. And neither side is willing to give here. We need to relearn the art of compromise. All right, tomorrow, Harvey J.K. joins me, and we will talk more about Biden and the speech. And just know, Harvey's in the same boat as Howie is. So I feel like I'm barking up a tree here, but I feel confident in how I feel. Anyway, that's that. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Sorry for the technical problems. My next stop is AT&T. All right, so I'll deal with that, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. Here we go. Oh, now the news. Oh, no. It's coming. Here we go. I read the
news today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the eve of his 100th day in office, President Joe Biden delivered his first address to a joint session of Congress Wednesday night.
100 days since I took the oath of office and lifted my hand off our family Bible and inherited a nation, we all did, that was in crisis. The worst pandemic in a century, the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. Now, after just 100 days, I can report to the nation, America is on the move again.
Biden used the speech to unveil his $1.8 trillion American Families Plan, which calls for increasing spending to provide family leave, child care, health care, preschool, and college education for millions of people, and paying for it largely by increasing taxes on the wealthiest Americans, and finally making corporations pay their fair share too.
I will not impose any tax increase on people making less than $400,000. But it's time for corporate America and the wealthiest 1% of Americans to just begin to pay their fair share. Trickle-down economics has never worked. And it's time to grow the economy from the bottom and the middle out.
Biden addressed Americans' gun problem.
Gun violence has become an epidemic in America. The flag at the White House was still flying at half-mast for the 8 victims of the mass shooting in Georgia when 10 more lives were taken in the mass shooting in Colorado. And in the week in between those two events, 250 other Americans were shot dead in the streets of America. 250 shot dead.
And he reiterated the need for police reform.
We've all seen the knee of injustice on the neck of Black Americans. Now's our opportunity to make some real progress. We have to come together to rebuild trust between law enforcement and the people they serve, to root out systemic racism in our criminal justice system. I know Republicans have their own ideas and are engaged in a very productive discussions with Democrats in the Senate. We need to work together to find a consensus. But let's get it done next month, by the first anniversary of George Floyd's death. The country supports this reform, and Congress should act.
The speech lasted just over an hour, about standard for this occasion. What made this speech really different, though, were the COVID regulations that allowed only 200 people in the room that usually holds over 1,600. And of course, history was made, or her story was made.
Madam Speaker, Madam Vice President. No president has ever said those words from this podium. No president has ever said those words. And it's about time.
Joe Biden's speech wasn't the only big news on Wednesday. The day began at 6 a.m. Eastern as federal investigators searched Rudy Giuliani's home and office in Manhattan with warrants executed under an escalating investigation into his dealings in Ukraine. The former New York City mayor and personal lawyer to the former guy is being investigated for possibly illegal lobbying on behalf of Ukrainian officials and his efforts to dig up dirt on Trump's political rivals. The FBI also executed a search warrant at the home of lawyers Victoria Tensing and Joe DiGenova. The warrant was for Tensing's cell phone. Former U.S. Attorney Harry Littman tweeted that, quote, "This means that a magistrate judge has found possible cause to believe that Giuliani's actions in Ukraine were criminal." Congressman Hakeem Jeffries tweeted, quote, "It's official. Rudolph Giuliani is now under federal criminal investigation." So there's that. Warning, the next few stories are disturbing. A North Carolina judge on Wednesday declined to release to the public body camera footage showing Pasquotank County Sheriff's deputies shooting and killing Andrew Brown Jr., a 42-year-old black man. Brown's relatives will now allegedly be allowed to watch some of the body and dash cam videos, but the judge said the deputies' faces and name tags will be blurred so they can't be identified. Brown was shot in his car outside his home in Elizabeth City, North Carolina last week while deputies were serving search and arrest warrants related to drug charges. By the way, this shooting occurred less than 24 hours after a former Minneapolis police officer was convicted of the murder of George Floyd. Moving on to Chicago, authorities on Wednesday there released body camera and surveillance video showing a foot chase that ended when a police officer fatally shot 22-year-old Anthony Alvarez. This happened early on March 31st. The video, released by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, did not show the moment Alvarez was shot. It does show officers chasing him down the alley, then catching up to him as he turned a corner and ran across a lawn. Alvarez appears to be carrying a cell phone in one hand and an object possibly shaped like a pistol in the other. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot called for calm before the video was released. Now we move to the San Francisco Bay Area city of Alameda, California, which showed an officer with his knee on the back of a 25-year-old Latino man gasping for several minutes before dying. That man, identified as Mario Gonzalez, is heard saying, "I didn't do nothing, okay?" One of the cops suggests rolling Gonzalez on his side, but the other says he doesn't, quote, "want to lose what I got." After that, I think we need some encouraging news. So there's this. A federal grand jury has finally indicted three Georgia men on federal hate crimes in connection with the death of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man who was shot and killed while jogging through a Brunswick, Georgia neighborhood last year. The father and son and friend, all of whom are white, all face one charge of interference with civil rights and one count of attempted kidnapping. The father and son were also charged with using, carrying, and brandishing a firearm during a crime of violence. The Associated Press wrote that this indictment marks the most significant civil rights prosecution undertaken to date by the Biden administration's Justice Department. And then there's this. There's been nationwide outrage in response to the video of Colorado cops violently arresting a 73-year-old woman who has dementia, and then laughing about the incident back at the police station. Well, the arresting officer, Austin Hopp, was placed on administrative leave last week, and now Loveland City officials have confirmed that three more officers have been suspended over the incident. The one who participated in the arrest and two others who were caught on camera laughing about dislocating the shoulder of Karen Garner. Sickening. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.